Good morning. Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. I'm following the script here. I hope that you all had a week that kept you warm and comforted, and you're pleased to be in a room where, even though it may be chilly due to a bit of a furnace challenge, most everybody I know in here doesn't mind you sitting close. I'm Al Haskell. I am your this morning's representative from the board. And I've got a variety of announcements to share with you. There are also, you'll find in your order of service, quite a few, not the least of which is to know that there is the Brewfest coming up next weekend. Today is the last day for you to sign up and take part in our annual Time, Talent, and Treasure silent auction, so you'll find that out in our social hall. So please be sure to stop by there and place your final bids. I'm told a cowbell will ring at noon, signaling the end of the auction, and that'll be it. You'll be stuck with what you've done. But again, forwardly speaking, thanks for all your wonderful, creative, and generous donations. I also want to let you know that you should look for information in the November newsletter about a special 7-session adult enrichment program that Reverend Jim will be leading. There'll be information, as I say, in the November newsletter. Starting in January, there'll be sign-up sheets and more information to follow. John Kuhn would like to tell you something about our search for minister. Thank you, John.
So, on behalf of our search committee, we're putting out one last plea for everybody to fill out the online survey or paper survey. There should be copies in front. The online survey actually probably goes easier and quicker, and it's easier to tabulate. But by all means, if you don't want to do that, be sure and do the paper survey. We're not quite at halfway participation, so we have less than half of the membership that's filled it out yet. And you may have thought that the listening session was a substitute for the survey, and it's not really quite the same. The listening session, we really want to have a one-on-one conversation and hear things from you in your own words and things that we might have not have thought of on the survey. But the survey is important because a lot of that information goes into our congregational record exactly as it's asked, and so we would like, you know, a good statistical sampling of the congregation. So again, we're going to tabulate the results probably early Monday, so you still have all day today. It takes 15 or 20 minutes, you be honest. It's going to take about that long to get through it, but we would really, really appreciate it if you'd get us at least over the halfway point and fill that survey out. And really, thank you very much for participating and taking the time to fill it out. We really appreciate it, and it'll help us get the best fit possible for next year.
So again, it's a little chilly in here, so at this point I invite you to warmly greet one another.
Good morning, Alan. Who are you talking to in the back room?
All right, if you're visiting us for the first time today, you'll find the same comfort after the service in our social hall, so you can regain that connection. If you are visiting us for the first time today, we do want to remind you to sign our guest ledger. It's in the foyer. There's a variety of information out there on our church and on Unitarian Universalism as a whole. I'll be in the social hall after the service. If you're at that point where you're interested in becoming a member, I'd be pleased to talk with you about that.
I'll be at my
Jim will be in his office for a short period of time until Jim and I and some others join a group to go through a orientation class, which is today at noon. Again, if you've not signed up for that and you've got interest in that, you're certainly welcome to join on their sign-up for that. If you're visiting us with children today, it's our custom for the children to remain in the service until after our story for all ages, at which time they'll go off to their religious education classes. If your child is more comfortable staying in the service with you, that's just fine as well. If you have small children, we do have a nursery out there, and really great kids, making sure your kids are safe and happy. Classes for religious education end at 11:15, and it's at that point that you can go grab your kids and bring them into the bigger world of our church. We always enjoy getting to know our guests, so if any members have brought guests today, we'd be pleased if you'd introduce them. If any guests have brought themselves and feel comfortable introducing themselves, then this would be a good time to do that as well. Okay, apparently I haven't helped you be comfortable. One last bit of information for you with regard to coming here for the first time. If it is your first time, I want to let you know that, you know, the topics and the sermons that are presented up here each week vary, and they vary both in the content and through different speakers. We do truly embrace diversity here. So do remember, although collectively we affirm and promote the seven principles, which you'll find in your order of service and on the wall as you walk in, that we're really not a dogma-based religion. So the experience, the message that you receive week to week varies. Again, plug to come more often, because it's hard to figure out what we're all about in just one sitting. Okay? Again, thank you all for coming. Everyone's invited to gather in the social hall after the service. There are many, many things going on. I want to make sure that the children know that there's a Halloween party, and children are asked to assemble in Classroom 5 after RE. They'll be trick-or-treating for UNICEF through the social hall at 11:30. That said and done, please join me in putting your phasers on stun. Reverend Jim will be speaking with us today.
I'm not Reverend Jim.
Reverend James Hobart the 17th. You're just Jim?
I'm just Jim.
It's kind of like the bishop in Caddyshack. I'm just a man. Yeah. Okay. I know that you're going to enjoy hearing from just Jim today. And with that said, you'll probably be pleased that I'm done. Thank you.
We light our chalice each time we come together for worship. Our chalice is a symbol of our common religious faith. The flaming chalice reminds us, inspires us, challenges us to live by the light and the warmth, the example and the possibility that lie within our liberal religious faith. Our ages-long religious tradition is the foundation upon which we build our life together and build our life in the world. The living materials with which we build include reverence for life, mutual respect and appreciation for one another, an open common quest for truth and meaning, a commitment to social service and social justice, an affirmation of the equal worth and dignity of all persons, and a recognition of the interdependent web connecting us to all existence. The flaming chalice represents our living and ongoing religious way, the bond which connects us one to another, connects us to persons around the world, connects us to the earth and all its inhabitants, and connects us to the unfathomable and unnameable mystery that lies at the center of the cosmos. In this spirit now, we light our chalice.
Please join me in the opening hymn, number 361, Enter, Rejoice, and Come In. And please stand as you're willing and able.
If you want to dance, warm up, it's a really good thing.
Congregational ingathering is number 661. The heart knoweth. I'll read the bold if you will read the italicized, please. We have a great deal more kindness than is ever spoken. How many persons we meet in houses, whom we scarcely speak to, whom yet we honor, and who honor us.
How many we see in the street, or see
these wandering I-beams.
So children in body and spirit can, and adults who like to see the pictures can come up as well. It's got good pictures, this story.
But in lieu of the pictures, we're going to have a special treat today. Our story is called Jack the Bum and the Halloween Handout. And I'd like to introduce Jack the Bum. This story is written by Janet Schulman. It's from the 1970s. Jack pulled down his hat over his ears. "Brr, it is cold," he said. Brr went his stomach. "Quiet down there," said Jack. "I sure would like a cup of hot coffee." He looked in his right pocket and he found two buttons, but no money. He looked in his left pocket, and he found a big hole. "Tonight is Halloween. This is a good night to bed," said Jack. Just then, a big man got out of a taxi cab. "Mister, can you spare some coffee, some money for coffee for me?" said Jack. "I only give money to UNICEF on Halloween," said the man. "Who is UNICEF?" asked Jack. "UNICEF is not a person. It is a worthy cause," said the man.
"I am a worthy cause," said Jack.
"No, you are a bum, sir," said the man. Jack walked down the street. There were many children on the street. They were dressed in funny costumes and scary costumes. Each had a big, full bag. "These kids know how to beg. I will ask them how to do it," said Jack. "It is easy," said a little ghost to Jack. "You ring a doorbell, and when someone opens the door, you say..." The children laughed. "That sounds easy," said Jack. He walked up to a house. He rang the doorbell, and a woman opened the door, and Jack pushed his foot into her face and said, "Trick or treat, smell my feet, give me something good to eat." She slammed the door in his face. "I should have washed my socks," said Jack. "The next time I will just say trick or treat." Jack rang the doorbell at the next house, and a man answered. "What a clever costume you have. We've had 3 witches, 4 ghosts, 2 clowns, and 1 Frankenstein, and a lot of fairy princesses.
But you're our first bum tonight, said the man. Trick or treat, said Jack. The man gave him a candy bar. I do not want candy, said Jack. I want money. Oh, the man said, have you collected a lot already? Certainly not, said Jack. Why do you think I'm asking you? I do not believe that you are collecting money for UNICEF, the man said, and he slammed the door. UNICEF must be the magic word, thought Jack. He rang the next doorbell, and a woman opened the door. UNICEF or else, said Jack. The woman just looked at Jack. She looked at his big toes. She looked at his shaggy beard. Aren't you a little old for trick-or-treating, she said. And she slammed the door. I do not understand what I am doing wrong, said Jack. Maybe they want a little entertainment before they hand out money. I will sing them a song and do a little dance. Jack saw a dark alley, and this was a good place to work on his song and dance. Yo! Went one alley cat, and then all the cats began yowling, and Jack sang louder. And he bumped into a garbage can. Crash, bang. A light went on up in a window, and a bucket of water came flying out of the window. Crash, splash. Jack was very wet, and he ran out of the alley. This is not a friendly place, said Jack. Now the street was full of children in Halloween costumes. Jack watched them. They were all going into a big building with a tall fence around it. Whoever owns that house must be very rich, said Jack. He followed the children up the steps. They did not ring the doorbell. They opened the door and walked right in. Whoever owns this house must be very friendly, said Jack. The children all went into a very big room, and Jack heard music. Good, they like music here. I can do my song and dance. Then they will give me money, said Jack. It was a very big room with a shiny wooden floor and no furniture. And at both ends of the room, there was a hoop hanging high on the wall. This is the funniest living room that I've ever seen, said Jack. He stood in a corner and watched the children. First, they handed a small box to a man. Then they sang on the floor and they played tag, or they tried to scare each other. It was very noisy. Suddenly, the music stopped, and a man walked into the middle of the floor. Attention, please, he shouted. We are ready to start our Halloween party, but first, I have some good news. We have counted all the nickels and dimes and quarters in your UNICEF boxes. They add up to more than we have ever collected for UNICEF. Everyone cheered. Does everyone know what UNICEF does? The man asked. It helps bring schools and healthcare and better houses to families all over the world. UNICEF helps people to help themselves. Jack opened his eyes wide. Now he knew what the magic word meant. Oh dear, he said. I didn't know the money was to help children. I didn't mean to trick anyone. All I wanted was a cup of hot coffee. He walked slowly towards the door. Now we are ready to give a prize for the best costume, the man announced. And the prize goes to that tall boy near the door, the one dressed like a bum. Everyone turned and looked at Jack, and Jack turned and looked for the tall boy dressed as a bum. Come here, young man, and get your prize. A woman smiled at Jack. Go on, she said, and she took him to the middle of the floor. Don't be shy, she said. But I am just a bum, and I don't deserve a prize, said Jack. The woman smiled again. Yes, you do. Your costume is very clever. You must have worked hard on it. It is so real. The man gave Jack his prize. It was a $5 bill. How can I make them understand that I am not a boy dressed like a bum, thought Jack. Then he smiled. Don't you want to know who I really am? Here, pull my beard and mustache, said Jack.
Ow! Pull it so hard.
Okay, said the man, and he grabbed it. Oh.
Ow! You have to pull it so hard. Pull it one more time.
You might find.
I got a rod in my pocket.
Hey, you aren't a boy dressed like a bum. You're a real bum, the man said. That's what I've been trying to tell you, shouted Jack. The children all laughed. And the man and the woman and the grown-ups laughed, too. And so did Jack. He looked at the $5 bill. Can I keep my prize anyway, said Jack. Well, I don't know, said the man. Because, Jack continued, I want to help poor children, too. Here is the $5 to add to your UNICEF collection, and he gave the money back to the man. Everyone cheered. And the man shook hands with Jack. Thank you, the man said. Now let's all celebrate with cookies and cider and coffee for the grown-ups. Coffee? Did I hear someone say coffee? Asked Jack. Sure, help yourself, said Jack. Have as much as you want. You are our guest of honor tonight. You made our Halloween party the best ever, the man said. Jack drank one cup of coffee, two cups of coffee. He ate a dozen cookies, and he washed them down with a third cup of coffee. And then he felt so good, he did his song and dance for everyone. And everyone cheered for Jack. We're going to pass out the UNICEF boxes to the kids before you go to RE. And just so all the kids know, we're going to trick-or-treat for UNICEF right after RE classes, so come to Classroom 5, and you'll all have a chance to do a good thing. Thank you.
And we're going to sing the kids out, so Kaya's going to take the lantern and lead the kids out. And then we're going to sing them out with hymn number 414 as we leave this friendly place.
This is the special time in our service where we invite you to share your great joys or profound concerns with each other in spiritual community. If you have a joy or concern that you'd like to share, please raise your hand and the usher will bring you a microphone. Tell us your name and then briefly tell us the joy or concern that you'd like to share. I'll light a candle to visibly represent your joy or concern, to be held in our thoughts and prayers. In this sharing, may our sorrows be lightened and our joys be multiplied. First, I'll light our memorial candle to symbolize the light and love we bring to each other that helps us heal and evolve.
Hi, I'm Barbara. Good morning, everybody. Actually, I have both a joy and a concern. My joy is that I am now going up to Mayo. I have been up all week, and I will be going back, and they're working real hard, and I know they're going to solve this. My concern is that my sister's cancer in the liver is growing again, and they're going to start on a new medicine. They had to get special permission. It hasn't arrived yet. It's $11,000 a week for the medicine. So please keep her in your prayers, thoughts, and light.
I'm Janice, and it's a joy for Jim and I to be working with the youth group, the high schoolers this year. We walked in the Crop Walk for Hunger and raised $665. That's enough for a community to have a well put in so they have a clean water supply. And the kids made it a lot of fun even though it was raining, so we had a great time out there. They're a wonderful group of kids. So concern for people around the world that are hungry, and joy for those that are working to make a difference.
Hi, my name is Esther. I had a sister-in-law die Tuesday night after at least an 11-year battle with Parkinson's. And she's the first in-law of my large family to die. So we buried her yesterday. So it was sad.
I'm Sue. Can you light a candle of concern for Abby's friend Melina, who was the North High School student who was struck while crossing the street on her way to school? She's home from the hospital and healing, but she was injured pretty severely.
I'm Sue, too. Please light a candle of joy for the joy and comfort that Linda and I both derive from being part of this community. We'll be heading south in a couple days, but we'll keep you in our thoughts and keep touch via email and see you again in April.
I'm Diane, and please light a candle of joy for my friend Gloria. She lives in Arkansas. She just had triple bypass surgery. She's home, and she was just amazed and so full of joy to see her daughter and granddaughter come in the door. They flew from Quantico down to Arkansas. Couldn't afford it, but they went. So just wonderful time.
I'm Robert, and if you'd like a candle of joy, I have a chance to work with about a dozen other people from around the country this week at the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee to develop some additional programs with the College of Social Justice, and I think it's going to be a great opportunity.
Hi, I'm Darla, and I just want to thank you all very much for being involved with Family Promise of Southeastern Wisconsin. You were the first congregation, and I am so proud of that. We had a little bet going on who would be the first, and we were the first, so congratulations to us. Thank you.
My My name is Chris. Please light a candle of concern for the shooting victims from Mazana. My daughter-in-law lives in Wauwatosa, and she goes to that salon on Sunday mornings, and her hairdresser was the young woman from out in Stonebank who was killed. So while we were sitting here last week, it was after 11 when that occurred. I know you all know about it, but I think it warrants a candle of concern for all of those people that touched. And it's, when you think about it, it's a huge number of people, the clients and the people who work there, and so it's a sad thing.
Hi, my name is Heather. I, too, am good friends with the owner of Mazana, so I agree with you. But I would also like a candle lit for my mother, who is having a foot surgery on Wednesday.
I'll light the last candle for the joys and concerns we keep in our hearts.
Let us join together in a period of mindfulness and reflection and meditation. Often we are distracted by the rush of events. We are crowded by the crush of people. We are preoccupied with communication, which interferes with true connection and deeper relationship. Here and now, let us pause for a time. Let us each listen to our thoughts. Let us each be aware of our feelings. Let us each know what we are experiencing now in this time and place among these people. Let us seek to be present to this occasion, the promise of our time together. Let us seek to be present to our companions, those present and those absent. Gathered together in this beloved community, we have the opportunity to nourish our companionship one with another. We have an occasion to enlarge our circle of compassion and care and concern. We have a time to move together toward greater understanding, enlarged appreciation, deeper commitment, greater justice for all people. Let our gratitude be apparent in our generosity of spirit, our generosity of time, our generosity of our resources. And now in silence, let us each continue in the spirit of meditation and reflection. Amen. Our hymn is number 407. Christy tells me this is one that is not so familiar to everyone, so she's going to play it through before we begin to sing it. Would you please stand in body or in spirit? The welcome table. We're gonna sit at the welcome table one of these days, hallelujah. We're gonna sit at the welcome table. Gonna sit at the welcome table one of these days. All kinds of people around that table, all kinds of people around that table one of these days, hallelujah. All kinds of people around that table, gonna sit at the welcome table one of these days. No fancy style at the welcome table. No fancy style at the welcome table one of these days, hallelujah. No fancy style at the welcome table. Gonna sit at the welcome table one of these days. I love the story and I love the costumes. Thank you for modeling no fancy clothes at the welcome table, Gus. When I was the minister in Denver, Colorado, my wife and I were co-ministers. We used to do a special Halloween and United Nations Day celebration every year. I have appeared in the guise of a leprechaun, Satan, the Unitarian King John Sigismund, and most memorably as Eleanor Roosevelt. Sorry I didn't think of coming in costume today. Strangely alike. A funny thing happened on the way to this sermon. In the beginning, I envisioned an erudite presentation on the way all we humans are alike, strangely alike, eerily alike, curiously alike, despite all of the many obvious, observable differences among us. In the beginning, the underlying theme was our unity and our diversity. And I wanted to show that both can be problematic. Not just our differences, our diversity, but our unity, our likeness as well. And conversely, both can be enriching and enhancing. In this regard, I'm reminded of a phrase, but I can't remember its source. It goes something like this: we are all alike in such a manner that each of us is at the same time unique. Maybe I came up with that myself, although I doubt it. It is more likely that I came up with that particular wording for somebody else's idea. I did Google it and didn't find anybody who'd ever said it before exactly that way. I do believe that the double realization is correct. A strange matter, isn't it? Difference and likeness, unity and diversity, both can be a problem and both can be a benefit. And this is true for individuals and it is true for cultures. Theologically, it might be described as the doctrine of original ambiguity, in contrast with the doctrine of original human sin or the doctrine of original human goodness. Historically, conservative Christians like the Calvinists emphasized human sinfulness, while liberal Christians like Unitarians emphasized human goodness. The doctrine of human ambiguity recognizes both our capacity for good and our capacity for evil, and sees both in our uniqueness and our sameness. Herein lies the source of human freedom, that we can choose for good or choose for evil. We are not programmed for one or the other. We have the responsibility to make choices, often difficult choices in complicated circumstances. Choosing, our capacity to choose, our freedom to choose, places upon us an awesome responsibility. It seems to me that this understanding, this recognition, this affirmation lies at the very heart of a liberal religious faith. We human beings are free within certain boundaries. We did not set the terms of human existence. These are given to us, including our capacity for free choice. We did not choose to be conceived or to be born, nor did we choose the times into which we were born, nor did we choose our circumstances in these times. We didn't choose our gender or our ethnicity or our nation or our economic circumstance or our family. All these were given to us. Our choices are within limits. However, while limited, our freedom is real. Our choices are not a sham. It was Albert Camus who wrote, "We are not entirely to blame. It was not we who started human history, nor are we entirely innocent, since we continue it." In the face of this searing reality of our common responsibility lying within our freedom to choose, persons and many societies turn their backs on freedom in favor of seeking security and certainty, and they follow those who offer an assurance of security and certainty and well-being. The grand inquisitors of the world, from ancient times to contemporary times, promise a security whose cost is to relinquish to them our capacity to decide and to act, our freedom and our responsibility. In that quest for security, the wondrous complexity of our human likeness and our human difference is infected with a suspicion of both. Unity and diversity are alike suspect, and the marvelous opportunity is missed for human enrichment and fulfillment that can be discovered in an appreciative affirmation of our unity and our diversity, and we are alienated from others, and in that alienation we become alienated from ourselves. The interconnected foundations of human individuality and human solidarity are both undermined. This, I said to myself, this is what I want to discuss on October the 28th. And from that solitary dialogue with myself arose the sermon title, Strangely Alike. Well, time passed, and I pondered about this sermon. And as usual, it was sometimes in jubilation and sometimes in near despair. And then, in a moment of pure grace, with no conscious thought or warning, a word came to me, and I know not from whence it came. The word was Sneetches. Did I invent it or remember it? Was it sense or nonsense? What in heaven's name does this unexpected and uninvited word, Sneetches, have to do with my sermon? My puzzlement lasted for some time. I would gladly have given it up since it seemed like such a distraction to the task at hand. And yet the word Sneetches would not go away. And then, in a moment of bright remembrance, it came to me. Sneetches, I exclaimed. Sneetches, I remember. And maybe you do too. Sneetches are characters in a book by Dr. Seuss that I read to my children 40 and more years ago. Well, okay, but what does that have to do with my sermon? I really didn't know, but I was motivated to find the book. So I went to the children's section at Hyde Park's Cooperative Bookstore, and there I found, and I know some of you have already figured it out, I found Dr. Seuss's The Sneetches and Other Stories. So I bought the book. Well, after all, I do expect my grandson and granddaughter will need me to read some good stories to them. And I took the book home and I opened it to the first story and I read, "Now the Starbelly Sneetches had bellies with stars. The plain-bellied Sneetches had none upon thars. These stars weren't so big. They were really so small, you might think such a thing wouldn't matter at all." But, of course, it did matter in a very big way, this small difference among creatures that were otherwise so much alike. "Aha," I said, "that's it. Strangely alike. Dr. Seuss has already preached my sermon." Well, I'll return to the Sneetches in a while, but first I want to say a few words about Dr. Seuss, Theodore Seuss Geisel, who wrote this children's book and more than 40 others. Theodore Geisel was born in Springfield, Massachusetts in 1904. His father and his grandfather were brewmasters at the family-owned small brewery. His mother told bedtime rhymes to her children, easy early stimulations for the rhymes that Dr. Seuss later wrote. His stories are marked by images from his hometown, beginning with his first story, "And to think that I saw it on Mulberry Street." I bet a number of you have read that story. Ted Geisel attended Dartmouth College, and it was there that he first used his middle name, Seuss, for the articles he wrote for Dartmouth's magazine. And Ted then briefly attended Oxford University, but he was bored by academics, so he returned to the United States, pursuing a career as a cartoonist. Some of his work appeared in the Saturday Evening Post, among other periodicals. However, he earned his living creating advertising campaigns for more than 15 years. As World War II approached in the late 1930s, Ted Geisel contributed political cartoons to PM magazine. And then during the war, Geisel served in the Signal Corps, preparing animated features as training and education for recruits. He continued to contribute political cartoons to a variety of periodicals. During that time in the 1940s, he became an illustrator of children's books, and then came his first book with both his illustrations and his text, And to Think That I Saw It on Mulberry Street. Well, this book was not an instant success. It was rejected by 27 publishers before it was finally accepted by Vanguard Press. And of course, it was a great success. And over the years, 44 more books followed, including such memorable characters as Bartholomew Cubbins and his 500 hats, Horton, The Grinch, The Cat in the Hat, The Lorax. Perhaps you have other favorites. Theodore Seuss Geisel, Dr. Seuss, lived until September 24, 1991, and by that time his books had been published in 15 languages and had sold over 200 million copies. And his works were as well the source of 11 TV specials, a Broadway musical, and a feature film. He won many other awards, 2 Academy Awards, 2 Emmy Awards, and the Pulitzer Prize. And, perhaps less important, he was a Unitarian Universalist. The Sneetches appeared in 1961. Their story was a tale about racial and ethnic prejudice. It goes like this: but because they had stars, all the star-belly Sneetches would brag, "We're the best kind of Sneetches on beaches." With their snoots in the air, they would sniff and they'd snort, "We'll have nothing to do with the plain belly sort." And whenever they met some, when they were out walking, they'd hike right on past them without even talking. Well, needless to say, the self-appointed superiority of the star belly Sneetches left the plain belly Sneetches demoralized and discouraged. And then along came Sylvester McMonkey McBean, and he quickly convinced the plain belly Sneetches to pay him $3 each to use his peculiar machine. "Just pay me your money and hop right aboard." So they clambered inside. Then the big machine roared, and it clonked, and it bonked, and it jerked, and it burked, and it bopped them about, but the thing really worked. When the plain belly Sneetches popped out, they had stars. They actually did. They had stars upon bars. Well, the original star belly Sneetches were confounded. "Good grief," groaned the ones who had stars at the first. "We're still the best Sneetches, and they are the worst. But now, how in the world will we know?" they all frowned. if which kind is which or the other way round? Well, McBean had an answer for them for a price. For $10, his machine removed their stars. Then with snoots in the air, they paraded about and they opened their beaks and they let out a shout, "We know who is who. Now there isn't a doubt. The best kinds of sneeches are the sneeches without." Well, of course, McBean then had to remove the offending stars from the former plain belly sneeches for a price. Back and forth, back and forth, stars on, stars off, each time for a price. And then, when every last cent of their money was spent, the fix-it-up chappie packed up and he went, and he laughed as he drove in his car up the beach. They never will learn. No, you can't teach a sneech. However, the sneeches and Dr. Seuss are not quite done yet. But McBean was quite wrong, I'm quite happy to say, that the sneeches got really quite smart on that day, the day they decided that sneeches are sneeches and no kind of sneech is the best on the beaches. That day, all the sneeches forgot about stars and whether they had one or not upon theirs. That's it. I'd say it's a simple story about a profound matter of likeness and difference, strangely alike indeed. The sneeches make the point, with or without stars. Well, what are the stars of our world? Well, among those I'd nominate are race and ethnicity and class and gender and sexual identity and youth and age and ability and nationality and language and, of course, religion. And further, I'd make this point. It is not that our differences don't make any difference. Our differences are real, and they are part of our identity and our orientation to life. However, while differences can divide us, they don't have to divide us. Differences can be mutually enriching when they are understood and appreciated. And I think this is a profound foundation of a free, creedless religious faith such as ours. We don't have to be exactly the same to be equally valued. That is one of our chief affirmations. In fact, together, we can be more because of our differences, not in spite of them. Yes, we can be more if we are mutually appreciative, if we relate to one another with loving kindness, if we approach conflict as an opportunity for greater clarification and deeper unity rather than an unbridgeable chasm dividing us between winners and losers, if we are guided by compassion, if we are committed to serving justice and resisting injustice. Well, there you have it. We are strangely alike in so many wonderful ways. And I want to express my thanks to Dr. Seuss for the sneeches story that makes the point better than I could make it myself. To think that I read Dr. Seuss to my kinder, I'll never forget, 'cause I need to remember. and you remember too.
So this is a time where we can have a short polylog. So if you would like to share your comments and perspectives about today's sermon, please raise your hand and the usher will bring the microphone. Tell us your first name and then briefly tell us what you'd like to share.
Hi, I'm Eric, and this is my fourth time at this church, and I just wanted to say the variety that I've experienced in this month has been just phenomenal, and I feel like I'm home.
Hey.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Sherry. I just want to say I'm a first grade teacher and have been for, this is my 28th year, and I love Dr. Seuss, and children love Dr. Seuss, and there are so many profound lessons about life that you can bring out in lessons to children, and that was just one really good example, so I appreciated you using Dr. Seuss today.
Hi, my name is Kaz. I teach Japanese at Arrowhead High School, and every year we talk about diversities. And because of our culture, it's so completely different from Japanese culture, is so different from American culture, and we could say it's a 180-degree difference. That I always tell them that this is a class about not Japanese, but this is a class about diversity. And we see everything from different points of view. And we have two eyes, one in left and one in right. And it takes two to see the depth of where you are. So it takes all of us, you know. And so diversity is good.
Thank you, everybody. Next, we will have our offertory. This is the time that we collect the offertory to support our spiritual community. If you're a guest today, please know that you are a welcome guest and a contribution is not necessary. The offering is given and received in grateful appreciation of our shared hopes and values.
Thank you.
Please join me in the congregational affirmation, number 576. A litany of restoration. If, recognizing the interdependence of all life, we strive to build community, the strength we gather will be our salvation. If you are black and I am white, if you are female and I am male, if you are older and I am younger, if you are progressive and I am conservative, if you are straight and I am gay, if you are Christian and I am Jewish, if we join spirits as brothers and sisters, the pain of our aloneness will be lessened, and that does matter. Our closing hymn is number 318, We Would Be One. Please stand as you're willing and able.
We now return to the world of our many ways. We go forth knowing that the way ahead will not always be certain. We go forth knowing that obstacles and barriers certainly lie ahead. We go forth knowing that the choices we faced will be difficult. Let us go forth confident that the bonds of beloved community uphold and sustain us all. Let us go forth with gratitude for the gift of life. Let us go forth with a generous spirit. Let us go forth with loving hearts. Amen.